Welcome to the Total Connector Show. My name is Kevan Devani. I hope you're going to enjoy this talk as much as I did with Calla Rosenbaum, the author of Grokking Bitcoin. I really wanted to go in a little bit deeper into the rabbit hole, especially from his perspective position in Sweden, since he's in Sweden, based in Sweden. He's a Swedish guy and Swedish, you know, expert. What's the atmosphere? What's the perception of people around Sweden is when it comes to Bitcoin, to money, the bigger picture, why Bitcoin? So there's a lot of aspects we talked about. And let me know your feedback. Let Calla Rosenbaum know if you have any other questions or after or before you've read his book, Grokking Bitcoin. So hope you enjoyed this and like, subscribe, share. And thank you so much for your support and for listening. Welcome to the Total Connector Show. My name is Kevan Devani. My very special guest today is Calla Rosenbaum, the author of Grokking Bitcoin. Calla, thank you so much for coming to my show. You're in Sweden, right?
Yeah, it's an honor to be here. Thank you very much, Kevan.
Thank you. All right, Calla, I started reading your book before I went up to the conference in Berlin, to the Lightning Conference, and I didn't finish it, I couldn't finish it, but it's a really great book, even for non-technical people, because I remember I read the Mastering Bitcoin of Andreas Antonopoulos, and the majority of the book is really technical, heavy technical, but there are some chapters, some good, sort of compact overviews and principles, explanations. So this is really what I loved about your book, because it's always about the question, why Bitcoin? What purpose does it fulfill? Where are we going with this? What does it do with us? You know, so whether it's technical or not technical. So my first question to you is, Calla, why did you write this book?
That one is pretty easy, because I was flattered by Manning. Manning contacted me by via email, asking me if I wanted to write a book about, they said blockchain. And I replied back and said I wanted to, that sounds interesting, but I would like to write a book about Bitcoin. And they came back and said, let's talk about it. And from there, it went on. So it was actually them asking me, which was pretty flattering. So that's why. And also, I think there's a big gap in the Bitcoin book space, or there was at least. There was these books that you talked about that was very technical and focused on programming code. And then there were books for visionaries and economists. And there was no book for people in between, like yourself, I guess, who were like technically interested, but not necessarily developers. So I wanted to write this book for them. And also, I wanted a book that I myself would have loved to read when I started out with Bitcoin. It was pretty tough back then to learn about Bitcoin if you're not a cryptography expert. I was just a normal software developer. So to me, it was pretty hard. I would have loved to read this book when I started out. So that's why I wrote this book, to help others in the same situation.
Great. So let me see. You have structured the book in a way that, first of all, it's some of the other books also, it explains what's the root cause, or what are the problems, or where do we start off? So do you want to from your motivation, from the intention, how you structured it, talk a little bit about it?
Yes. As you say, I try to explain why the technology that we use, Bitcoin, matters, why we need it, and I do that by building Bitcoin from scratch. In chapter two, we start out with a very basic spreadsheet system that anybody can understand. So it's a simple spreadsheet system where a central authority named Lisa updates this spreadsheet system. Whenever someone wants to pay, she is the central authority who updates the spreadsheet. And from there, we point out problems with this spreadsheet. For example, somebody can come to Lisa and say, "Hey, my name is Kalle, and I want to move money to Bob." When in fact, it's so Mallory can go and say, "Hey, I'm Kalle, please move money to Bob." And Lisa will just do that because she doesn't know everyone's face. So then we add digital signatures to that system so that Lisa can verify everyone's digital signature when they move money. So, and the book continues like that from chapter 2 to chapter 8. We just add new technology, we point out problems, and we add technology that fixes those problems. And I don't know what happened here. Okay, sorry. Yeah, I'm with you. Yeah, so up until chapter 8, we build up this system that we will end up with Bitcoin at the end. And then we have a few more chapters after that with some bells and whistles on transactions, and I explain SegWit and upgrades to Bitcoin. But the core chapters builds Bitcoin from scratch by pointing out problems with the current system, and we add technology that fixes the problem. And I think that's I like that process because it's hard. If I would explain Bitcoin as it is from the very beginning, you need a lot of context in order to understand why transactions matter, why digital signatures matter, or why proof of work matters. So that's a good way to break down the system to avoid this circular problem where everything is intertwined as it is in Bitcoin.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
What I really find interesting is that you are a computer scientist, and to explain this to, first of all, layman people, and also people who might have a technical understanding or understanding of the technical concepts. Sometimes I think for a lot of people might be a challenge, but you've taken a different approach. And from what I see, the testimonials that you've gotten back, the feedback you've gotten back, it's really amazing feedback. I didn't even know that Andreas Antonopoulos even was sort of also helpful in giving you some kind of feedback, right, during the process of your publication work.
Yeah. I reached out to him early on when we negotiated the contract with the publisher Manning, because I wanted to publish this book open source. And I wasn't sure how to approach Manning about this. So I talked to Andreas Antonopoulos about it, and he gave me some valuable feedback there. So gave me more or less the courage to go on with my pursuit in open sourcing it. So they finally agreed on open source terms. So, and we published it open source this summer. So it's freely available on GitHub right now. And I also have a generated version at my personal website.
This is great.
If you want to try before buy, you can just browse through the content. It's rosenbaum.se/book. if you want.
Okay, I'll put that later on in the show notes. Yeah. So Kalle, when you get like feedbacks from your readers or other, you know, people who either come from the, you know, technical computers or just layman, what is the, like, what do you have the feeling is are the biggest misconceptions or where the aha moments, you know, where people like, oh, I thought I never understood this, but now I do understand. What is like the feedback you're getting, like when it comes to misconceptions or misunderstanding or just not comprehending, you know, how the principles work behind, you know, the structure, the, of Bitcoin.
Yeah, I'm not exactly sure about what misconceptions I sort out. I haven't seen much of that in the feedback. Apart from the feedback has been like generally overwhelmingly positive. People who have read the book has come up to me and said that they absolutely love the book. So I'm extremely happy with that. But when it comes to aha moments, I'm not sure. It's very, very individual, I guess, what people, what kind of misconceptions people have. But so I can't really answer that. Sorry.
Yeah, yeah. Do you see more and more people getting interested who might come, you know, from the technical background, from the a programming background, coding background, more and more focused into Bitcoin. So we will eventually have a, you know, we'll just call it an army of really beautifully contributing coders, cryptographers, programmers, developers, because the content, because the, you know, the understanding is expanding.
Yeah, definitely. I think that the more content we put out there, the more good approachable content we supply, the better. Just look at the number of participants and on conferences. It's just it's exploded, both the number of conferences and the number of attendees at the conferences. It's just exploded in the last few years. So and I think that goes hand in hand with the education. So, yeah.
Yeah, because I noticed at the Lightning Conference in Berlin, it's like, it's amazing how many people from so different backgrounds and perspectives, and it's really a melting pot of people, you know, coming together and working, you know, for one cause, for whatever motivations and intentions, but it's, you know, it's because, as I see it, you know, for the ethos of it, for the bigger picture, bigger vision, and this is what really fascinates me. You know, the question or the background of a lot of people: why do they come into this space in the first place, and where do they end? Because you know, we've all been, you know, through the all this crypto hype and blockchain hype and bullshit hype and you know and shitcoinery, and it's really interesting how people, you know, that's why. I was gonna maybe, you know, ask you still in detail, what was your path to Bitcoin? What did you see when you first understood what Bitcoin is about? What kind of vision and roadmap did you see ahead of you know, for us, for all of us, for humanity, for our society, for the monetary problems we have?
Yeah, those big questions, those big problems were I didn't focus much on them. In the beginning, it took me a few years before I started understanding money and the world. I'm still trying to understand the world as it is today. It's super complex. Money is super complex. So it's just in recent years that I actually started thinking about these big problems. Before, it was just, to me, it was just cool technology. I thought it was fantastic with money that you can't censor. But I live in Sweden, which is a pretty open society. We have fairly okay leaders. And so we don't see much of the problems that Bitcoin is solving in Sweden. So to me, it's not that. So it wasn't obvious to me why Bitcoin was was necessary. It's just in recent years that I started reading about other parts of the world. You know, the world is not just my hometown where I live. So yeah. So what actually got me started in Bitcoin is just pure technology, like how the system works, more the how, not the why.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk a little bit about Sweden, and you know, because I got to know some Swedish people, and what I really admire is, you know, their sort of open-mindedness, and you know, as you say, it's a liberal, open society, right? What is the perception of people in Sweden when it comes to, you know, the monetary, you know, problems we have, or what's the not only in regards to Bitcoin, but what kind of feedback perceptions do people have about money? Is there something to work on, or is it just good as it is?
I think people in Sweden are pretty naive about their money. Mm-hmm. I think most people, Sweden has gone very far when it comes to a cashless society. Most payments today are credit cards, and we have an app called Swish that the central bank is backing. So everyone more or less has an account at the central bank, so we can switch money between each other for free, and it's super simple. And we have this bank ID. We have an ID solution called the bank ID. So Swish in combination with bank ID is, well, it's pretty good actually. So it's very simple to use, and everybody uses it. But cash is very hard to get around in Sweden with cash today. You can't buy lunch in most restaurants.
Really?
Wow. For cash. Mm-hmm. And people tend to think this is a good thing. People tend to think that it's good because the people can do shady business with cash, but they don't see the downside of it, which is total surveillance. And I think that's unfortunate. I'm not sure how this is going to end, but as it is now, cash is fast, on a very, very rapid decline in Sweden. And I think that's a big problem. And I think people are too naive about it.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. But do people care in Sweden about privacy? I mean,
not much, unfortunately, much. No. Mm-hmm. Because if they were, they would refuse to use electronic money.
I see.
Yeah.
So that means they do. They also don't really care about if they were surveilled, like really abuse of surveillance. You know, that's the problem.
Yeah. Yeah. Of course, they don't want to be abused, but they think they people have a very high people trust government very much. Mm-hmm. Because historically the Swedish government has been pretty good, not very corrupt, pretty open. So I think, so people trust the government very much, and they.
That's interesting.
Sorry, I
that's okay, because I want to know when they read your book, like Swedish people reading your book, do they understand the potential of Bitcoin? Like when I'm in Austria, you know, I mean, we've got the same problems actually, you know, even though like in countries, German speaking countries like Austria, Germany, we still have, you know, a pretty heavy cash society. I mean, especially the Germans themselves, I think 80% of them, they still insist on using cash. So we're coming back to this question, why Bitcoin? Because I always come back to the, you know, why should we trust people? And eventually, you know, people say, especially in Western comfortable countries, you know, developed countries, they say, why do we need Bitcoin? I mean, I got, you know, I empathize with them because why do they need Bitcoin? You know, you've got your ATM, you've got your credit card, you've got your cash, you've got, you don't have the privilege, sort of having a bank account. So there is no reason to use, you know, to use Bitcoin to buy your proverbial coffee. The question is, again, do people understand the true potential, the bigger picture, the bigger vision behind Bitcoin? So what do they think, for example, about inflation, about the monetary economical problems we have? These are just, you know, symptoms that we might feel and see, but we have much, much bigger problems. And I see not only the problems, I see the potential, what we can do with Bitcoin. So this is what I'm going to, I'm trying to go into that direction with this question, like, do, amongst other, you know, people or countries, do Swedish people, for example, understand what we can, what kind of society we can create, much more open, much more freer, much more, you know, abundant, advanced.
Yeah, I think most Swedes think that inflation is something that's just a given. It's just a natural law because that's what the economists say. They are So and of course. They are pretty happy with cheap loans because they can buy fancy houses that they don't actually can afford. So it's kind of people on an intellectual level, they would probably see a problem with this, but on a daily day-to-day basis, make a living level, they just, they're pretty happy with it because they can get cheap loans. So I very, very few people actually think about the bigger pictures. I try to explain in the beginning of the book, in chapter one, I try to explain the why of Bitcoin. I talk about inflation. I talk about surveillance, seizing and freezing of funds and so forth. So I try to set the stage on a global level there instead of just, you know, Western world. So hopefully that will get people to think about the bigger picture when they think about Bitcoin.
Yeah, because in order to, you know, to take an action or to understand, okay, this is where we're going, this is the reason, this is the purpose of Bitcoin.
Yeah.
People, what I observe is that the more I think about it, the more we talk about this, it becomes clear how deep the indoctrination, the brainwashing has been ongoing. You know, I mean, this is the most people, as I, you know, as probably you also know, when they get in touch with Bitcoin for the first time, they understand, they go into the rabbit hole, you know, of what is money, how is it being created, and what is, you know, what is Keynesianism or Keynes. Yeah. What is this whole monetary economical structures or the central banking structures, which are literally above the law? So in order to, you know, to take action, to make a decision, one needs really to know the root causes of all the symptoms. So this is what always fascinates me. You know, what's the perception? What is really the comprehension level of people? And I had to start somewhere too myself, you know, a few years ago. And there are some people who come, I met a guy from Norway, I believe he was, he went into the Bitcoin space like in 2012 or 2013. And he had a friend who came from the libertarian background. Yeah. So it's very interesting how people, you know, find their path into Bitcoin, you know. But usually most of the cases, which is good, you know, which is, I think it's a logical step-by-step learning process. You begin to question, you know, the nature of money. What is it? Is this really a logical, ethical, natural state of money, or is it a condition, or has it been artificially fabricated? And this is what we have. And in order to get there, and I think we would have much more open-mindedness and approachability, you know, to Bitcoin for a lot of people, if the root causes or the bigger picture was were to be understood.
Yeah, and I think it's a very, very high learning curve if you want to understand money today, because money today is so complex, it's so intertwined. You have central banks, lenders, and decision makers. And this system is extremely hard to understand. Of course, people are not going to study this stuff because it's too hard. I mean, the people have better things to do with their lives, they think. So on the other hand, a system based on sound money like Bitcoin is very easy to understand, I think. So going from this very hard system, very, very problematic system, that's extremely hard to learn, and from there understand why Bitcoin is needed, is extremely hard, because you need to understand this old legacy system. That's just, people aren't gonna understand it until they see their economy break.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, good point. Yeah. Good point. You see, and I've been talking to a lot of studio guests of mine and interview guests, and Sweden, of course, I heard a lot of positive stories about Sweden because they're so progressive, they're open-minded, they think ahead, the liberal principles. I mean, this is what I hear, even on the social, but I know there's a lot of really serious problems right now because of the global implication, because of all these, artificially created conditions, which create those problems also for the society, for people, for the pop. But the thing is, once people, as you said, they feel and they see that the pain points, like economy breaking down, because now it's everything intertwined and interlocked. So, and Sweden, well, it's part of the global system. So, it's not me saying it, but a lot of experts, whether the Austrian economists or really people who've gone into the rabbit hole, and well-known really economists in Austria, in Germany, in Europe, they're saying, the recession is going to come by end of next year. And a lot of banks can crash, and we don't know what's going to happen to the euro. Inflation could be really one of the venues which we could go into. So, this will have a chain reaction effect on other countries too. And yes. Sweden is not isolated. I think this is what people need to understand. So wouldn't it be better to think ahead and to, allocate a small percentage into Bitcoin, have a, as a whatever safe haven or capital preservation, what have you. So it's probably not because of our also of our, which is in Bitcoin standard Safed and Amous book, the exploration of low time and high preference. We live in a high time preference society where people are not able, it's become sort of indoctrinated to us not to think ahead. Maybe we can think of tomorrow than the day after tomorrow, even in terms of risks or dangers. So I think it's a real challenge for individuals, for society, for humanity, to feel, to understand, into the what's coming up, and it could be next year. It could literally be next year or 2021, where all these things that are taking place right now globally, and just starting in the European Union, could just unfold like really by order of magnitude. And this is what I find a little bit disturbing and sad, that people are not getting it. Because on the one hand, yes, it's preserving your wealth. You can live the principles, of decentralization, of free choice, of freedom, of censorship resistance. On the other hand, I see a much bigger picture, and that is, you know, the true potential of Bitcoin. What we can literally deroute this old, what do you want to call it, criminal and exploitative and abusive system, and just transform it with new roots.
Yeah. Yes, I agree. I heard you talked about this with Adam Back. I listened to your last show with Adam Back. And I think it's actually every responsible investor should keep a small percentage of their wealth in Bitcoin as a hedge, as you talked about with Adam Back. I think that's really important. Regarding the economy, how bad it is, I for sure can't say how bad it is because I don't understand the world enough, and I guess nobody does. So we can just guess. But you can apply some common sense to the world as we live in today. We have inflation. Well, what does that mean? What's the implications of inflation? Well, that incentivizes consumption, for example, and consumption causes pollution. And creating money out of thin air, well, who gains from that? And so if you just apply common sense, you don't have to be a PhD in economics or you don't have to be an economist to apply some common sense. And when you start to think about fixed money supply, what that would have, what kind of implications that would have on society, it's you know, you start thinking in, along those lines, you can come quite far with just some common sense without prior knowledge on economics. Just apply your common sense. That's what I've been doing. And it's taken me quite far, though I can't cite Mises and Rothbard and those guys.
It is really a deep rabbit hole. So do you think that the kids or the younger people, the younger generations are being, you know, being born into this new realm, new space, are getting it much quicker, and they have the much bigger potential to understanding it and, you know, understanding the principles, and the reason, you know, the question of why Bitcoin? Would that be a huge potential,
I'm not sure. They are born into this world as we have it today. Bitcoin is not, omnipotent today. It's not, Bitcoin is not everywhere. So we still live in the legacy world with unsound money. They are born into this world where with easy money, cheap lending. So I'm not sure. Their parents have huge mortgages, and they live under inflation. I don't know if they, well, they are more tech savvy. They can use apps, of course, but I'm not sure that helps that much. So I'm not sure if they are more perceptive of Bitcoin than an older generation. I'm not sure, actually. I certainly hope so, but I'm a bit skeptical there.
I see. Who do you think is the average reader of the book?
The average reader. I wrote the book for technically interested non-developers, but also developers. But I mean, the minimum qualified reader is a technically interested person who is not necessarily a developer. But I think the typical reader is a developer. I mean, most readers, I think, are developers. Anyhow. But I'm not sure about you. Are you a developer in any
way? No, I'm not. No. No.
So you are the perfect target audience for the book, I'd say. That it was you I had in mind when I wrote it.
Yeah, that's why I'm so excited about this book, because it really, you don't have like to read the whole book to understand, you know, the communication of your comprehension and you know, the facts, the reality of Bitcoin, like understanding the principles, what purpose does it fulfill?
Yeah.
You know, it goes into the deeper question of why Bitcoin, you know, what does it do? You know, what is it for? Good. It has to have some meaning, some sense of it, make some sense of it in order to go into that rabbit hole. And this is what I think triggers a lot of people. Then it's like, maybe I should look more into this. You know, maybe I finally should have some kind of skin in the game, start experimenting, start playing around with it. And then you're going, you know, into all kinds of rabbit holes with that.
Yeah. I want to add that it is a very highly technical deep dive into Bitcoin. So it's highly technical, but it's at the same time tries to explain why we use certain technologies and what we want to achieve. But the book is pretty deep. It's almost as deep as Andreas Antonopoulos' book, but we explain stuff in different ways.
Yeah.
So I think we are complementing each other.
Yeah, definitely. I love that when things are complementing one another, because it's, you know, it puts things into perspective. It gives it, you know, a more holistic approach. Do people like, or do you think that your book has the potential to make out of this, you know, like an addendum sort of, you know, like additional workshops, maybe, you know, for interested people who want to, you know, develop this more or put this into practical usage?
I'm not sure I understood the question there, but do you mean if we could build some kind of courses around the book?
Yeah.
I'm thinking about it. I think it's a pretty good book for a course on self-sovereignty. I mean, become a power user of Bitcoin. So I'm thinking about a course for non-developers, and developers who want to, I mean, start using Bitcoin in a very, without trusting third parties and long-term storage and stuff like that. So I think this book would be a pretty good basis for a course. Yeah,
definitely. And I think it would really empower people to go on their own paths, you know, and develop. Yes. Because it's all about, you know, trial and error. It's a learning process. I think there's a huge still, whether it's, you know, the, let's say in the bigger picture of Bitcoin or Lightning Network, it's there's problems still to be solved.
Yes.
You know, whether it's whatever, you know, scalability, speed, the fees to be paid, the adoption, you know, the user interface, user experience, the very, you know, for non-layman, it's not understandable, of course, for layman people, but the intricate technical aspects of it, I think there's a lot of challenges, right, to be solved. Where do you see those challenges where maybe new potentially, you know, capable people could come into this space and learn from one another? Where do you see the potential of improvement, optimization? As a computer scientist.
I'm not sure I understand the question, but I'll answer a question that I think you might have asked. For Bitcoin to be resilient against authoritative regimes and stuff like that, we need users that understand the core principles of Bitcoin. Because if people don't understand the core principles, they are easily fooled, and they so Bitcoin needs a very broad base of users who won't fall for tricks. Who will run their own node, enforce their own the rules that they believe in, because otherwise Bitcoin wouldn't be censorship resistant. Bitcoin wouldn't be resilient. So So this book tries to teach people enough so that they can understand the core principles, so that they can enforce the rules that they think are important. And that's David Harding writes about this in the foreword of the book, which I recommend you read. He writes about Bitcoin needs users that understand the core principles to preserve the resilience of Bitcoin.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure if I answered your question here. I think, yeah, maybe.
Yeah. No, it goes into this exactly this direction. You mentioned full node, okay, and I understand. You know, there's this also like. You know, as I also said a couple of times, this progression levels that also, you know, that Stephen Lavera talked for the first time, this progression level of going from an exchange, you know, then getting hardware wallet and getting your full node and connecting your full node to your hardware wallet. Do you, in order to become, you know, a fully self-sovereign citizen, Bitcoin citizen, you know, totally independent, you are your own central bank, sort of, you are fully sovereign, you help, you know, secure the network, you help, you validate your own transactions. Do you think it is going at the pace, at a rate of speed, which it should be going, or do you think we should really be, you know, jacking up the speed of people getting their own full node in whatever way, whether it's a plug and play from Casa, which I think, you know, still from a price level, it could, there's huge space for improvements. For the average person speaking, or do you think it's still way too complicated, complex, technical to set up your own full node? Because, you know, in the end, what is it about? It's about censorship resistance. It's about, you know, being independent, yeah. not having to rely on third parties, third providers.
Yeah, I think people overestimate the complexity of setting up your own full node. It is not that hard, okay. Especially if you're on the GUI version. And regarding speed, if I think adoption of full nodes is fast enough, I don't know. I think so. I mean, it has the adoption rate. It has. We can't. There's little we can do to increase the speed. Well, we can write books and so forth, but I think Bitcoin has the adoption it has, and if I want to increase adoption, well, I can write a book, but there's no one who can say, oh, we need more nodes, so please everybody install new nodes. It's not that Bitcoin has the adoption it deserves or has. So,
mm-hmm. Okay.
And I think it's fairly all right today. I don't think Bitcoin needs faster adoption on any level, which is, I think the adoption has been, overwhelming actually the last 10 years.
Yeah, definitely. No, I totally agree with it. It's just that I'm thinking already ahead as a preventive measure.
Yeah, yes.
We cannot be ready enough. This is my concern, is that once things really fall in place, it would be good if really millions and millions of people were to have their own full node. This is what I think.
Yes. Yeah. But also, at the same time, if millions and millions of people run their own full node and start using Bitcoin more, technology might not keep up with the adoption pace. Mm-hmm. Because we need to scale Bitcoin on a, you know, scale slowly, scale responsibly. And so, I'm not sure. I'm happy with a very slow adoption rate. But of course, the more people that protects Bitcoin's core values, the better.
Mm-hmm. Seems to be, because I'm not technical, there was discussion of Andreas Antonopoulos in his talks and his presentations. There seems to be a controversial discussion of privacy on the protocol layer, on the base layer, That's what he's saying. Andreas Antonopoulos is saying the privacy should be solved, or should have been solved, or should is the only way to be solved on the first layer. And some people or other people, there seem to be segmented groups who talk about the privacy layer can only be solved on the second layer. Can you comment on that a little bit? What is this discussion about?
Say both. I mean, there are privacy improvements to be made on the base layer, but obviously we have Lightning Network with improved privacy. You can see the channels on the base layer, but you can't see every individual transaction on the base layer. So you can add you can improve privacy on the base layer, and you can improve privacy on layers above, I think. I mean, Lightning does it. So, but there are some people who argue that Lightning is actually base layer. So, because reasons.
Okay. So, Khaled, do you see other fundamental problems which you maybe in your opinion could where developers or the technical people could more or should have more concerted effort in cooperation in solving problems instead of, discussion is always good, exchange of thoughts and all these conferences taking place. But from your perspective, do other features, functions, problems to be solved, which could be more done efficiently together? As a more efficient teamwork, or
maybe that's the case, but maybe it would be more efficient, but it's not the way it is. Development is the way it is because people, have different views on how to scale Bitcoin and how to make it more private. So I think development has to be fairly diverse and adversary even. So I think the landscape we're in right now is pretty healthy. I don't think we need more efficient decision making. Who's to make the decisions anyway? So, in the end, it's up to the users to select the software they want to use and the rules they want to apply to the blockchain. So I don't think we need to make it more efficient in any way. Maybe it could be made more efficient, but I don't think we need to make it more efficient, because we can't make it more efficient because this, the landscape is what it is because it's a decentralized environment.
Mm-hmm. What is the roadmap for yourself now in connection with this book? What is the roadmap? What are the next steps you want to take? I mean, teaching or empowering people.
Yeah, I'm still in the dark there, actually. I'm thinking about creating some kind of course around it. Maybe write another book or just work on software development. I had this consultancy firm. I do consultancy work within Bitcoin half-time. And other half is I do whatever I want with. So me and my wife bought a 203 multisig wallet project that we've been working on quite a while now, but it's going really slowly. But we try to make a super simple 203 air gapped multisig wallet.
Oh wow! Excited. Okay.
It's a single purpose 203. SegWit only multisig wallet. So we'll see how that evolves. It's still early. Mm-hmm. So there's books, there's courses, there are and there's our own little pet project. So I don't know. to be honest.
Mm-hmm. You said you have a consulting firm. Yeah. What I want to know, what I'm interested in, is that the people you consult with or you work with, what's the reaction? I mean, what demands do they have when it comes to, you know, to aspects like decentralization, central? Do they get it, or do they want to do their own centralized stuff with that, what you're offering, with those services you are in consulting with?
Yeah, it differs quite a lot on customers, mm-hmm. on my clients' perceptions on that. I just want to add that I'm consulting as a developer, so I, mm-hmm. I do, you know, developing services for Bitcoin companies. So and that doesn't necessarily have to do with Bitcoin all the time. So
okay.
mm-hmm. I do a lot of, you know, general backend programming that sometimes doesn't have anything to do with Bitcoin. But I work for Bitcoin companies because I want to work in that space. So.
I see. Yeah. So, Khaled, in conclusion, is there anything fundamentally important you think people should look into, should educate themselves on, should listen to? Besides, you know, of course, they should definitely read your book. I can only recommend this to everybody, whether, you know, one is technical or not, because you get a really much, much more substantial, fundamental understanding of those principles. And are there any really important things from your position right now that you really want to emphasize to people up there, to my listeners?
Yeah, run your own full node. Take a day and try to get a full node running on your computer, mm-hmm. and use it. Not just if you don't use it to verify your own transactions, you're not actually using it really. So set up your full node. Use a wallet that can connect to your own full node as a trusted node, and use that. That's my 2 cents.
Wonderful. So I will put your Twitter handle is at Khaled Rosenbaum. Anybody
yes.
who wants to follow you. Let me see. You also have your publisher manning.com.
Yes, that's right.
And you got a github.com/ColorRosenbaum /GrokkingBitcoin that I'm going to add to. And
yes.
The book is also available on Amazon, of course, where you can also have a sneak preview into the book. Any other information or links or website you might have?
Yeah, you can go to Rosenbaum.se/book.
Okay, I'll add that too.
Yeah, because that's where I keep my generated version of the open source book. Because the open source version is not it's not really readable. You have to download it. You have to build it on Linux with special tools. So, if you just want to try before buy, you can go to rosenbaum.se/book to just.
Okay, I'll add that too.
Yeah.
Wonderful. Okay, Khaled. Well, thanks so much, Khaled, for your time and for, you know, sharing your thoughts, knowledge, and wisdom. I hope we can, you know, repeat this discussion or maybe continue discussion in a framework of a panel discussion. That would be also very interesting in the future. And thank you so much. If you have any final thoughts, just let me know.
Thank you so much, Kayvon. It was a pleasure to talk to you.
Yeah, have a good time and say greetings to Sweden.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye, Khaled.
Welcome to the podcast show by Kayvon Devani, the Total Connector, Total Bitcoin, Austrian Economics, the hardest and scarcest money ever created in human history, Bitcoin.